Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, are you okay? You don't look so good. Your pupils seem dilated.
I'm not sure, Jim. The carpet is moving around and I'm seeing three of you.
Okay, well, I don't see the carpet moving at all. And if there are three of me, just realize I now have three times as much hair as you. How is that going to help you?
It's not.
It's not comforting. Okay, so it's Friday on the show.
It is, Jim.
I toast you with a Stone Ripper San Diego Pale Ale, which you bought.
Love Stone beer, Jim. Anything that they make, they have a East Coast base in Richmond now.
Fantastic.
It's tasty stuff. Cheers. Love to it. You. Happy Friday.
Ah, very good. Okay.
Refreshing.
Now, yesterday we talked about a book called Capitals of Punk.
We did.
And we had a great interview that Randall Brown submitted with the author Tyler Sonicson.
Yep.
Today, we are going to visit Patrick's Book Nook.
Book Nook.
Right? Yeah, you said there's something about theme music in the works.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned this last time,
yeah,
too.
That's right. You may hear it right now. To the Book Nook. Look, we have books. And over there, another book. And right over there, it's Kindle. Wasn't that great theme music?
That's right. But anyway. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lennon.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And what books do you want to discuss today?
Well, I got three books I'd like to talk about, Jim. Two of them about one band.
Amazed by this.
Both these bands don't exist any longer.
Okay.
So it actually kind of goes back to a night out, Rockin' the Suburbs night that you and I had when we went to see Spiritualized. Jason Pierce's band, otherwise known as J Spaceman, they played the Lincoln Theater in D.C. We had a fun night out. It was kind of like going to a Pink Floyd concert, man, because they had like the graphics behind them.
It was trippy.
No opening act, and they sat down. It was like really cool.
It was trippy, and the music is kind of spacey like that too.
Very much so. Yeah. So before Spiritualized, there was a band called Spaceman 3. They were from Rugby in England, formed in 1982 by Pete Kember and Jason Pierce. Pete Kember went on to be probably better known as Sonic Boom, and he did a project called Spectrum, and then Jason went on to do Spiritualized. And before that, however, they had this band that sort of became a cult band. So I read two books on Spaceman 3. The first one was published in 2009, written by Eric Morse, and it's called Spaceman 3 and the Birth of Spiritualized. So it's essentially a solid overview bio of the band, how they got to be where they were. A lot of things about this band were interesting. I mean, they once released a record called Taking Drugs to Make Music to Take Drugs To. So they chemically were very inspired by chemicals in making their music. In the book, New York Times critic Neil Strauss is quoted as writing in 2003, this is probably the best description I think you can come up with of Spaceman 3's music. So he writes, filtered garage rock through the long lens of minimalism. With whispered vocals and droning guitar, Spaceman 3 turns songs into textures and albums into moods long before Radiohead even existed. Since splitting up, both Mr. Kember and Mr. Pierce have released high-quality albums on their own. But as good as their post-Spaceman efforts have been, none have matched the breathless beauty, sonic intensity, and musical prescience of their work together.
We'll be right back.
it was very much a case of, you know, kind of a Lou Reed, John Cale thing where they made magical music together and then just, you know, began working separately in the studio and sort of fell apart. But during their existence, they weren't overly popular. They had a sort of scrape. They did really bare bones tours, never made it to the United States. They, gosh, I don't know, influential in a certain section of U.S. underground. I think they connected with people that were into like mid-80s Sonic Youth and the Flaming Lips and Dinosaur Jr. in that period. I know Forced Exposure was where I first heard about them because they were big supporters of the band, but they were really small. Most of their music was not released in the U.S. It was all imports. They do have an amazing album called The Perfect Prescription. That's probably the high point of Spaceman 3's work when they were really working well together.
I was just noticing that on Spotify, it says fans also like when you put in Spaceman 3. And I did not plan this at all, but one of the bands listed there is My Bloody Valentine.
Oh, that's amazing. So that's another one. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Another one here, which I totally get, is Brian Jonestown Massacre.
Exactly.
Yes.
And they will come up in just a second regarding the other book. So it's interesting. They were groundbreaking in many senses. One, that they were minimalists and a lot of their songs had one or two chords and they droned on for a very long time, but also they were very open about the fact that they used chemicals to inspire their music creation. Sonic Boom, who was the most vocal about it, has a quote in here that I just want to read. He says, "I think good music is the same kind of experience as a drug experience. The bad thing is when people start making drug music or acid rock, because invariably they sound pretty terrible on drugs. A lot of acid rock sounds horrendous to me on acid, whereas stuff like Buddy Holly or Screamin' Jay Hawkins, now that's real acid music." So I thought that was kind of cool. Listening to Buddy Holly on acid, that must be some kind of trip. But anyway, if you don't know much about the band and you want to kind of get into their legend, I would highly recommend this book. It's, I think, the only sort of, you know, really solid biography of Spaceman 3 and Spiritualized. And it just shows how the band started, you know, evolved to the point they did, never really got very popular, and then just sort of disintegrated. So that's that. Now, the other book that came out in August of 2016 is written by Will Carruthers. And Will Carruthers was the bass player with Spaceman 3. He later played a little bit with Spiritualized. And then, Jim, as you said, he went on to play bass for a while for Brian Jonestown Massacre. So
okay.
Totally fits. It's a first-hand account of the highs and lows, the misery of playing in a cult band before they actually were a cult band. You know, they were kind of creating the cult. He never made much money at it. You know, they drove around in crappy vans, and it was really Jason and Pete who were writing most of the songs and therefore getting whatever royalties they were. The title of the book is Playing the Bass with Three Left Hands. And there's a really funny story in there where he took some acid before a show and he was looking down to play and he had three hands. And his lesson was always go for the middle one because the other two are probably phantoms.
Right? That I...
Yeah. And so he tells it very much from a first-person perspective, and also not just the band, but, you know, at times he had to go back when they were off tour and work in factories and rugby, and for a while he lived outside, like, and he moved back in with his parents. So it was very difficult for him to actually make a living at it. He never really did. He also has written a short story book called A Book of Jobs that documents all his crazy jobs. In one, he mentions briefly in this book, Playing Bass with Three Left Hands, he was sniffing a certain solvent that he used in a machine shop and with another coworker who got a little lazy with his hand and actually lost two fingers in one of the machines. And then when the guy came back, Will Carruthers looked around at all the other people working there and noticed that very few of them actually had all 10 fingers. So he left that job not too long after. But a fitting epitaph for this book, he said, being a musician is a noble tradition. I am glad and honored to have given back a little of what I got from it. I am glad to have given a little to someone who might give a little back to someone else someday. If you must lose, lose again, and lose gloriously. They don't call it playing for nothing.
Hold on a second. I smell burning. And I see a change coming around the bend. I suggest to you that it takes just 5 seconds. Just 5 seconds of decision to realize that the time is right to start thinking about a little revolution.
I love Spaceman 3, I love Spiritualized, and I like a lot of the Spectrum stuff too. So if you like any of that stuff, these are really enjoyable reads, and it really does kind of take you to a different time in a different part of England. You know, they never were near Manchester or London and just sort of operated from this strange little base in the middle of England. So
yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah. But I think have over the years really grown in
absolutely
sort of stature, right?
Yeah.
And
there is
growing their fan base.
There is one part in there. If you're in doubt about their influence, look them up, and you'll find these pioneers of drone rock have influenced everyone from Nirvana to Daft Punk to My Bloody Valentine, as you said.
Yeah,
their recordings and uncompromising attitude continue to be cherished as a source of inspiration. So that definitely new, whatever new psychedelia you might call. I mean, you could say the war on drugs and some of Kurt Weill and those guys are influenced
another
by them as well.
Yeah, good point. So two things real quick. One is getting back to the seeing the three hands on the neck of the bass, right, or whatever. I've often found that similarly to help you out if you're ever in a drunken bar fight, you aim for the guy in the middle.
That's right.
That's probably the real guy.
Not the guy on the right or left.
Yeah. So
you're going to smash a stool over his head.
That's right. So there's that. Number two, did we talk about the Spiritualized concert at all?
Not much on the podcast?
I think we talked about
we were going to go
and maybe you played a song on something.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I did play
on a new music episode.
Right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think so. Yep. But you mentioned the video screen behind, which I just found really captivating. And also the setup was just really unique.
It was really cool.
They almost play like in a song circle kind of thing, like facing each other on the stage, not facing the audience.
Which is neat.
Jason uses like a music stand.
He does. It's cool. Yeah.
So it's almost like you're sitting in on just them kind of jamming,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Like a rehearsal or something. It's cool. And also three female backup singers singing in a very gospel style, accenting the song.
And he never addresses the crowd. He doesn't say a word. There's no stage banter, none of that.
Nothing.
No introduction of songs, anything. It's just, when I was a kid, going back to playing the trombone and all that kind of stuff. My parents really tried to get me into classical music. And so we would go to symphony concerts, stuff like that. And it's kind of similar to that kind of a setup, right?
Right.
They're seated around kind of in this like half circle and they just perform, right?
Yeah.
For you. And you're just supposed to sit there and listen and appreciate the music. And I kind of feel like that's what they want.
Exactly.
That's the experience that Spiritualized wants you to get from this, right?
Taking out a lot of the extraneous stuff about those kind of shows,
right?
Yeah. And, you know, they have a new album out. They play the new album from start to finish. That's what they're there to do,
right?
Promote the new record. These are the songs we worked on.
We are performing this song cycle for you.
That's right. Yeah.
And hopefully you appreciate it, right? Yeah.
So that's Spaceman 3. So check those out. Playing the Bass with Three Left Hands and Spaceman 3 and the Birth of Spiritualized. So this next one, I don't have a whole lot to say about it except to highly, highly, highly recommend it if you like Joy Division. So the author, John Savage, who is a very well-known author. He started writing for Sounds in 1976, right after he graduated from college. He has written what I consider to be the Bible on English punk rock. It's called England's Dreamin', Sex Pistols and Punk Rock, first published in 91. And I believe there's an updated edition out there with that goes into the reunion, I believe. But it is the book that tells the story. He was there. He was writing for Sounds. He was doing a fanzine. So he's written an oral history, or compiled an oral history from all the interviews and all the things he's done. He did some new interviews with it as well. He had a lot of access to Bernard Sumner, Peter Hook, and Stephen Morris, as well as Rob Gretton, who was Joy Division's manager, and Tony Wilson, who ran Factory, and also weaves in historical interviews with Ian Curtis when he interviewed with newspapers and music magazines at that time. It's very readable. It's not super long.
Yeah.
If you like Joy Division, there's a ton of cool information. And what I really like about what John Savage did is it's obviously chronological, but when important events happen, he'll just insert in the text, hey, here's where this took place. Here's where they went in for their first recording. Here's where they did their first show. Here's when they did their first tour. And so it helps you mark, like almost with historical markers, where stuff was. So one interesting thing I learned, I didn't know this. First show that Joy Division, well, you know, they didn't start out being called Joy Division. They were called Warsaw.
Yeah.
And before that, they were going to play a show. Their first show, the Buzzcocks got them the show in Manchester, and they didn't have a name at all. So Pete Shelley suggested they should be the Stiff Kittens. So this appeared on all the posters. And at showtime, they decided, nah, we're not going to be the Stiff Kittens. We're going to be Warsaw. And it's actually because of the David Bowie track. Really, really big Bowie fans. What made Joy Division stand out was that they didn't really follow any punk hierarchy like The Fall. You know, they had their own sound. The other thing I learned about this that was so interesting is when they were rehearsing, Bernard Sumner's amp was so loud that Peter Hook couldn't hear his bass very well. So that's why he started playing those runs high up on the neck.
Oh.
So he could hear himself. And that became one of their defining sounds.
Absolutely. That's a highly influential, sort of pioneering
really
move,
is.
Right?
Yeah, and mainly came about because he couldn't hear himself during rehearsals. The drums and guitars were so loud, he went up there to dig through the sound.
I love stories like that.
It was great.
Yeah.
So I can't say enough. It came out April 2nd, 2019, so it's brand new. It's called The Searing Light, The Sun, and Everything Else, Joy Division, The Oral History. Well worth picking up. And I think John, you know, just basically is using all of his interview archives and some new interviews to put together this really fascinating story. So, but for a story, Jim, I think that we know how it ends and we know what Ian Curtis was and who he was and how
right.
important he was. It's still fascinating and riveting to read. So I quite enjoyed it.
Now, I have to bring this around to movies because I watch a lot of movies.
Yep.
Did you ever see the movie Control?
I did.
Which is the biopic of Ian Curtis,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I like that quite a bit.
Me too.
I'm
done.
Looking at this now and I can't believe it was 2007
That's
when that came out.
Ago,
yeah,
I know. Yeah.
But I thought that was really well done.
And there's also some really good stuff in 24-Hour Party People. You hear about Tony Wilson and Rob Gretton and all those guys too. So, yeah, great stuff. And an interesting look at Manchester, which operated as a second capital of music in England. Yeah.
All right, cool. Excellent.
Yeah, so that's my reading.
Good recommendations.
Yeah, I hope you guys can get out and read one of those soon.
All right, if anybody has any books that you think we should read,
please.
You can send them to us.
Yeah, I'd love that. That's the best thing to do.
We have a P.O. box.
Oh, yeah, Jim, I checked it the other day. There was nothing in it yet.
But somebody did ask for the address recently,
okay,
so keep
great.
Checking it.
Okay, I will.
Keep
yeah,
checking
it. We checked it on Monday, so.
So while we're talking about this, I'm actually going to mention the address.
Yeah. And also, I think our friend and listener from Falls Church, my Bill Mulligan said we should double check the zip code because I think I gave the wrong zip code. I might have given my zip code instead of the actual PO box.
Well, I have. This is what they wrote at the
22040. Oh, okay.
This is the PO box address: 800 West Broad Street, number 6577,
Boom.
Falls Church, Virginia, 22040.
Oh, okay. Make sure to get that zero on the end.
So, if you want to send us any books,
there's
or
plenty
other
of room
free stuff.
Yeah, free stuff and books. Send it to that PO box.
That's where it goes. If you want us to send you stuff, then you can go on to our Patreon account, patreon.com/suburbspod, and you can become a patron there.
Yeah,
there's
just
a financial donation, but it varies, and depending on what tier you choose, you
That's
can get
right.
some you can get some stuff from us.
Yeah.
So enjoy that. And what else? Oh yeah, and then if there's any books you've read you just want to talk about, you can hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Suburbs Pod. You can email rock@suburbspod.com. You can send us a letter to the PO box, or you can call 612-440-1984. And
it's hard not to get in touch with us, actually.
I know. Or open the window and yell.
That's
what we used
too.
To always say. All right. I think that's about it.
Yeah.
It's Friday. We got some stuff to do. We
got the weekend coming up.
That lawn is not going to mow itself. So let's move on from this. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys next week.
Warsaw, Warsawswa.